Welcome back to Cocktails and Classics. This week, as always, it's Dylan, Ben, and Cam.
It is not as always. Just want to throw that out there. You say as always.
But as I always say, it is as always. And this week we did the 1975 crime drama thriller Dog Day Afternoon. To kick things off and get everybody in the right mood, we're going to go to this week's cocktail.
I found something called a bank robber on Easy Cocktail Recipes.
Nice. Reputable site.
It's a rough one. So this one, you basically, it's just like five alcohols. So you combine vodka and raspberry brandy in a shot glass, and then you put rum and gin into that shot glass, and then you top it with chilled Everclear, and then you shoot it.
Yum. Chilled. Good thing the Everclear is chilled, because that makes it taste so much better.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing in there has got to be the blackberry brandy.
Hey, I know you're drinking straight ethanol, but at least it's cold.
The website says, warning, you have to have guts to try this.
Robbing a bank or that cocktail?
Yes.
Probably both. More so to do the cocktail, but...
If you're ballsy enough to try it, robbing the bank or the cocktail, let us know at Cocktails and Classics Pod on Instagram.
If you do rob a bank and get on, like, live TV with the anchor dude, and you're, like, calling him and saying stuff, why don't you just give us a shout-out?
That would be kind of cool. I mean,
however, make it clear that we're doing this.
It's because of Cocktails and Classics.
Yeah, make it clear that we did not.
We are not accessories to your bank
or
robbery.
Force you or coerce you into doing it. But if you just want to say, on an unrelated note, listen to this podcast. I think they're really neat. That would be appreciated.
But hopefully, you're like a cool person. I mean, Sonny wasn't the coolest, but like,
he was kind of
like the people's champ. So if you're like that kind of guy. Shout us out. But if you're like a really shitty human,
yeah,
and
if you're the Dwayne Johnson of bank robbers, the people's champ, the yeah. Rock for the millions and millions,
you can shout us out. But if you're like a shitty person, please don't.
If you're like a Sal, don't shout us out.
I don't think Sal's shouting anybody out.
Sal was ready to kill some motherfuckers in that bank. He was ready to murder or be murdered.
I don't know. I was a little.
He said he was. He literally was like, "Was that true what you said about the bodies? If so, I'm ready to go."
He also straight up was like, "Hey, remember the pact?
You told me we were gonna kill ourselves.
If we're not getting away clean, we're killing ourselves." And so he's just like, "Oh, okay."
So he's like, "Yeah, I mean, I kind of was talking out of my ass there.
I thought for sure we'd just get away clean, so I didn't really care about the other part." You know those things where the
people really
are like,
consider the other part
like,
of that. Yeah,
like they promise something and it's like, well, yeah, but I was it so was like sure it was gonna work. I didn't think
Scott's
about
Tots episode of The Office. Yeah. but you promised me that we
I
were gonna
think
off
this
ourselves.
Far ahead.
How about some computer batteries instead?
So anyway, if you're like Sonny, give us a shout out, I guess.
But check out the show notes below for the recipe for this bank robber. And hit up the Drizzly. It's going to be Drizzly links right now. I don't know what's up with Caskers. Everything says sold out when I go on there all the time. So I haven't been dropping links because I don't want to like people to be going and not buying anything. But maybe they'll be back by the time. But hit up the Drizzly and Casker links and get yourself five different alcohols and just, you know, get a little schwasty. Maybe try it out with your friends if you're going to have a little party, you know, lake weekend with the boys.
That's what beer's for, though.
Yeah, but could you imagine drinking cold Everclear like a G?
No.
You'd be blackout face down in the lake.
I've never actually had Everclear, and I don't know if I ever will. It's not really on my bucket list.
I don't know if I have had it.
Didn't Zach have it at like his like engagement party or whatever?
He may have. I don't
know.
I
can't remember
if
that was Everclear or just like 151. I don't remember.
Nice.
a true relic of the past.
I don't remember.
151, that is, not Everclear.
Yeah.
Everclear should be a relic of the past.
I remember when we went to do something on this podcast and it called for 151 and I straight up just couldn't find it anywhere. And then finally I asked someone and I was like, do you guys have 151? And he goes, they don't make that anymore. And I felt like such a fucking loser in the liquor store. Like, I felt like a guy who knew nothing.
They haven't made 151 for like years.
Other companies make like a high, like overproof.
They make a high proof. Yeah.
But like,
you just have to look like an overproof.
Yeah, it was Bacardi.
Bacardi does not make 151 anymore.
The top thing, why did Bacardi stop making 151?
Because they could sell less alcoholic things for the same price.
Yeah, it doesn't say any official reason.
I would just assume that was the reason was, if we sell less alcoholic things for the same price as the more alcoholic thing, we will make more money on their supply. Because we could basically cut it.
Oh, interesting is they actually did, there was a lawsuit against them. Because the plaintiffs claim that it, quote, emits high levels of combustible and explosive vapor, which makes it unreasonably dangerous.
Ethanol. It's alcohol. Of course it's going to be highly flammable vapors. I don't know. Yeah. That's like the people who win the lawsuits on the, like, McDonald's coffee and
okay.
shit.
Okay.
Okay, the McDonald's coffee, totally different thing.
Yes. McDonald's literally had their coffee
together.
Also, their coffee was like three times what it was supposed to be capped at. Like, their coffee was way hotter than it was supposed to ever be.
And I don't think they gave her a sleeve, if I remember correctly, even.
I don't think they just handed it to her. Right?
I don't know.
I don't know, but like I said, their coffee was like... It was insane. Yeah. Like, the actual temperature for their coffee versus what it was supposed to be.
From what I recall, too, she just asked them to pay her medical bills, and they told her to kick rocks.
Yeah. Yeah. She basically was like...
she was like, okay, well, actually...
you guys need to cover
the
medical costs, and they're like, no. And she goes, okay, fine, then I'll sue you for, like, millions of dollars.
Yeah. Dylan fell victim to the classic McDonald's campaign scheme.
Dylan out here simping for McDonald's. Shilling for McDonald's. For the corporations.
Wow.
Really not a people's champ.
You guys
really
all took this same fucking college class where you learn about that stupid shit.
I didn't take it from a college class. I just found it out on the internet one day. And I was
research.
Like, oh, that's shocking. I did not know that.
I just decided not to be a corporate shill.
Yeah,
this is a podcast
that on
for the
QAnon.com, you fucking losers.
Wow. Wow. I feel like they would be simping for McDonald's in that.
Yes, 100%.
This week we did Dog Day Afternoon.
Attica!
A 1975 biographical crime drama film based on the magazine article about a true bank robbery with similar events to this one. Currently sits at an 8 out of 10 on IMDb. Directed by Sidney Lumiere, who also directed 12 Angry Men, Serpico, Before the Devil Knows. He directed like The Wiz, I believe. Stars Al Pacino, John Cazale, Penelope Allen, Sully Boyer, Carol Kane, James Broderick. It's the story of three amateur bank robbers who plan to hold up a bank, a nice simple robbery, walk in, take the money, and run. Unfortunately, the supposedly uncomplicated heist suddenly becomes a bizarre nightmare as everything that could go wrong does.
Three bank robbers, yes. All three of them.
Yeah.
One quickly runs away.
Yeah, that guy bolts immediately, folds
immediately. One guy immediately goes... this is a robbery, and goes, I can't do this. It's like, I need
that
to
was,
leave.
That was so awkward. I was like, what is this movie?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Dog Day Afternoon won one Oscar for Best Writing Original Screenplay. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor in a Leading Role for Al Pacino, Best Actor in a Supporting Role for Chris Sarandon, Best Director, and then Best Film Editing. I hadn't seen this film. Had either of you?
No.
We've had this one for a long time, and I just never got around to watching it, and I slept on this movie for way too long, I realized by the end of it.
Yeah, I had no idea what this movie was about until I started watching it. Like, I literally have never heard of this movie, maybe beyond the title.
Well, they reference it in Mindhunter. In the very first episode of Mindhunter, Holden goes and watches it.
I know I'd seen, like, references of it in other stuff of, like, the... Like, the situation of, like, the bank robbers, but they get along with the... Like, the hostages actually, like, they get along with them and, like, they see them as, you know, they're bad, they're the bad guys, but they're not bad guys.
Yeah. I know in Mindhunter, it's more about, like, why he's robbing the bank to, like, fund Leon's sex change.
Yeah.
And, like... What would, like, drive somebody to that? That was more what they were referencing in that show. Man, Al Pacino in this movie is so fucking good.
He's way better in this movie than, like, any other role I've seen him in. By, like, a wide margin. It's not even close. It's, like, not even close.
I'm not gonna lie.
It makes me wonder where he was in all the other ones.
There have been times watching other, like, movies that Al Pacino's done where I'm just like, I don't get the hype.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you know, yeah, it's like, oh, Al Pacino's one of the greatest actors. And it's like, you know, I've seen him in a couple things, and there's some things I've seen where I'm just like, really?
Well, like, I think he just does... I think post a certain point, he's just done so much, like, shit.
Oh, I mean...
As well, like he was in Jack and Jill. Like... he was in Geely, the fucking Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez film that was awful. Like, I feel like he's done so many, like, he was in Heat, he was Scarface, you know, like...
Godfather,
he was in this movie. Like, he's done, like, so many, like, amazing movies, Scent of a Woman, like, there's all these, like, classic movies that he's been in that he, like, actually was good in, and then you get, like, you know... Jack and Jill, or like 88 Men, like these generic kind of Righteous Kill, like these generic kind of action movies that he got stuck in like the mid to late 2000s. That, like, I feel like it's like one of those actors where it's like, oh my god, he's in so much good shit, and then like he gets like this height. Like, I feel like for me, Morgan Freeman is a little bit like that. Like, Morgan Freeman has some really good stuff. And then it's like, oh, let's get Morgan Freeman because it's Morgan Freeman. And then it was kind of like, okay.
Hey, Bruce Almighty's sick.
That was kind of the one I was referencing.
Come on. Bruce Almighty's a good movie. What's up?
Where it's like he's the voice of God, you know? I'm like,
I mean, he literally is God. He like has a, yeah, he has, you see him in the movie.
Yes, I understand.
Is God.
What do you mean?
Said the voice of God.
What do you mean? The bucket
I mean, he's
list?
Also the voice of God in the...
But he is God, too. Like, he, like, you know, you see him on screen as God.
I will fucking kill you.
What if God was one of us, you know?
Just a slob, like one of us.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe these guys just don't know how to handle their money, and they just are like, I'll do anything that will literally pay me at a certain point, like the Nick Cage effect.
Yeah, I mean... I feel like you see a lot of things like that, especially, this sounds bad, but like a lot of the times it's like after like a bad divorce where it's like they lost a shit ton of money, and so their way to make up for it is by just taking any movie that will like pay them, and they'll pay them big money. And yeah, that's how you get actors that make just absolutely terrible movies.
What's Julia Roberts' brother? The dude who's literally in anything that will pay him money.
I don't know.
Eric Roberts?
Eric. Yeah, it's Eric.
Why did I not realize that was Julia Roberts' brother?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Holy I didn't know shit. That was Julia Roberts' brother
dude,
either.
Eric Roberts is literally in anything that would like give... Holy fuck. If you just go to his IMDb page, okay. 696 credits, and just... I can't even find one that has been released. Everyone on is... Oh, okay. Here we go. Now am I finally at the end of the page. The first 50 credits are all pre-production or filming.
Oh, my God. It's crazy because we just talked about how this dude has a ton of act of credits, or sorry, of actor roles. Al Pacino has 64 actor credits.
John Cazale has 5 or something like that.
Okay. In, yes.
We talked about this.
We talked about this 2 episodes. I don't. Did it make the cut? No, I don't think. I think we talked about this.
Yeah, like we last talked about week.
Post filming. Was it last week or the week before?
Yeah. I think it was last week
when we first talked about doing this movie, and then it got delayed the week.
Yeah. So there's this. There's a documentary about John Cazale's career. Because he died early.
Yeah, which I just saw that.
Pretty young, like, what was it, Ben?
42 or something.
He had cancer? Lung cancer, but it spread pretty quick.
Yeah.
Like, he was in, I think, only 5 or 6 movies, and all of them were nominated for Best Picture.
He's like, he was in a lot of, like,
5
good roles.
Movies in 7 years, and these are The Godfather, The Conversation, The Godfather Part 2, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter. That's it. All of those movies are like fucking classics or highly regarded. And like, that's like, if you are going to only be around to make 5 movies and that's your 5, like you had a perfect game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing we talked about was that, like, he was dating Meryl Streep at the time, and like, she's also in the movie The Deer Hunter, which was the last movie he was in, and he like passed away right after like he filmed the scenes.
So basically it was like they wanted him to be in The Deer Hunter. The movie studio wouldn't
insure him
or insure him to do it. So I guess Robert De Niro basically put up the money. Robert De Niro paid the cost to get Cazale in the movie. Which is
that's
pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, just absolutely nuts that, like, hey, I'm just going to be in 5 bangers.
Which is it's so weird to me as Sal. I feel like he's such a big part of the movie, but he has so few lines and doesn't play mm-hmm. that big of a part in the movie. So basically, the plot of the movie is. Starts with 3 people. There's Sonny, Sal, and then I forget the other person's name, because the other person literally, like, they go in, they basically stick up the place, and then the one person like scares out and runs out, and then it's just Sonny and Sal in the bank with all the hostages,
right?
And then quickly it kind of starts to go south. Because the cops show up, because he sets the registry for the bank on fire, and then they notice the smoke. But then you find out that, like, they're doing it for the money, and then Sonny is doing it to get money to pay for his wife Leon's sex change operation, because they go to therapy, and the therapist is like, oh, you're actually a woman. Or, like, you would be more comfortable as a woman.
Yeah. And it seems like the catalyst for him robbing the bank was she tried to kill herself. Mm-hmm. And because she couldn't get the surgery. And then it seems like that's when he started acting erratically around his other family. And then did this.
Which is such a, like, it's a very interesting. And I think that's what makes the movie so good, is like you almost kind of rooting for Sonny and Sal, but they're also not great people at the same time, because like Sonny and Leon says, like, oh, you like pointed your gun at me and you've said, like, go to sleep so you don't, like, you won't feel it and all that shit. And it's like all this fucked up stuff that he's also doing to like the people he loves. But then at the same time, he's like, he's nice. He's like, he doesn't want to harm anyone in the bank. Like, he's like, he just wants the money, basically. And he wants it for like a somewhat altruistic reason, because it doesn't seem like he wants it for really anything else. He just wants the amount to pay for this operation. And I feel like that dichotomy is what makes a character interesting. It's like, oh, I want to, like, they're a bad guy because they're robbing a bank. They're doing something they shouldn't be doing. But at the same time, they have, like, somewhat altruistic reasons. So you're like, oh, yeah, no, they're kind of good. They're kind of like Robin Hood in a sense. But then it's like, oh, shit, they're also kind of a shitty person. So, like.
I mean, they also do kind of go out of their way to, like, not kill people a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they want a hostage. Let's send the security guard who's like having an asthma attack.
Yeah. Right. Or then he tries to send out the guy who's like having
the manager
insulin problems.
Yeah.
And well, even like, then, no, like, I don't want to leave.
When the manager's like, he's like, hey, you're going to help me move this. You're going to help me barricade this thing. And he's like, talk to him. And he's like, you're insured, right? Yeah, I'm insured. You got a wife and kids? Yeah, I just want to make sure I go home to see him. Oh, man, yeah, I want to get out of here without, like, anyone getting hurt. Like, I don't want any trouble. I just want to be, like, in and out. And like, it seems like he legitimately doesn't want to actually hurt any hostages as much as Sal's like, I'm ready to fucking
Sal's ready
murder
to grip
someone
and rip
now.
It. He's ready to pull the trigger if needed.
Sal is his own, I feel like, can of worms, because he's like, he doesn't say much.
I mean, I think he's
he just kind of seems
like
a yes,
like, just
man
for
almost.
The sake of doing like money, you know. Of...
Yeah,
I think they met in prison, right?
Because he said he went to prison.
I don't
before.
Know that they say that Sonny was in prison. I know Sonny says something about being.
I was a little confused.
I know about that Sonny part. Says something about being in Nam, and I wasn't sure if like maybe they were like war buddies. I kept trying to figure out during the movie if that was like explained where they met, but I don't think it. I don't think it's ever really explicitly explained.
I know. Sal at least says I'm not going back to that prison.
Yeah, it's clear Sal has been to jail. I wasn't quite sure about.
I don't know.
Though.
Sal seems like he might be like uneducated.
About what?
Well, there's like, whoa, do you want any country you want to go to?
Oh,
Wyoming.
Yeah.
Or the thing he like fixates on when they're like talking about on the TV, they're like, oh, like it's two homosexuals.
I think he's like, just homophobic.
Well, tell him, which is such an interesting. Like you're the person you're robbing the bank with and you're friends with is like gay.
At the time. Maybe like yeah that
I mean maybe Sal didn't know what he was doing it for, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's possible he didn't know, although he didn't seem like he was terribly surprised by that revelation either. Like he was like, hey, there's only one of us in here, there aren't two, make sure they know. I think he's just being homophobic, which is obviously something that was very prevalent then, you know, like They kind of, like, made fun of him when they found out about that.
Yeah, they kind of lean into it, too. Like, on the television, like, they're like, and we're getting a bunch of calls in that say I was, like, the spawn of Satan or some shit.
Yeah.
Or, like, that Sonny doesn't represent the gay community, and, like...
I will say for a movie in this 1975 that has this content, I think they did it very well. Like, I feel like... Oh, yeah. What?
I said, yeah. I think it still stands up today as far as like that sort of content that they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I just think I was just impressed how well it seemed like they handled it, and that they, I don't know, like I was expecting it to be a little cringy and it wasn't.
Yeah, but I also think it's different when it's one, it's based on a true story. Two, that true story happened 3 years before the movie came out. Like, it's kind of fucking insane. Like, I feel like nowadays it takes a while before there's like an adaptation of something that happens in real life like this. Like, I can't think of something that's been like, oh yeah, this thing happened, and then within 2 years the movie was in development and by the third year it was released.
I mean, they're already working on the fucking GameStop movies.
Oh my god. When did that... Oh, I guess that was 5 years later. I was trying to find out when that, like, Flight 93 movie came out. I guess that was in 2006.
When did 127 Hours come out? I feel like that one was fairly...
2010.
When did that shit happen?
Let's see. 2003.
Okay, so that was 7 years. You said it was what, 3 years?
Yeah, the movie was released in September 20th of 1975. The Life magazine publication came out in September 22nd of 1972. But it doesn't say when the actual robbery took place. I'd imagine the robbery would have had to have taken place relatively to a close to the same time, though. There's no way...
It is 1972 robbery.
Okay, I mean, I was watching that movie and like looking at the research and thinking about the fact that like 3 years later they turned this around about this real life event that happened. And then it got me to thinking, like, when did All the President's Men come out? What, 76? And when was Watergate?
Yeah, that's another one where I feel like it happened pretty soon after the events. All the President's Men was 76.
And the Watergate scandal was 72. So, like, that's when the actual scandal happened. I don't know how long their investigation in that lasted.
Well, also, it says that the scandal went from 72 to 74. So, like, 2 years after it ended, when Nixon resigned is when the movie came out. It's pretty gnarly.
Like, could you imagine? Like, could you, like, that would be, like, basically sometime, like, this November slash next January, there being a movie coming out about, like, the quote, the election that was, quote, stolen, or the January 6th stuff. There being a movie about that already. Just being like, holy shit.
Yeah. I wouldn't rule it out.
It's just one of those things that's just nuts to me of how fast they... Yeah, but I don't think... I feel like today they would not be able to do it as quick just because I feel like they have to do so much more in terms of like clearing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I mean, I don't know how it was with Nixon, but Lord knows with fucking Trump, you could not make a movie that has a reference to him without him just the way the political climate and the world that, well, not the world, the United States climate is, you can't make that movie without there being a lot of fucking issues.
Yeah.
But I don't know how that was at the time of without living through Watergate. I very much doubt that it was like, oh no, we believe everything Nixon says wholeheartedly, no matter what. And any proof that you have that shows me that I'm wrong is fake. But
yeah, if I remember correctly, though, there were actually a lot of polls before Nixon resigned that basically said that the Republican populace still stood with him.
Oh, yeah.
And then after...
I believe it.
And then after he resigned, people basically flipped and were like, oh, yeah, he was so bad, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, a month ago you were ready to die for this dude.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, it's just that the problem is that people nowadays won't just let it go and admit, like, or just try to change their opinion without being called out on it. They just decide that this is the hill they have to die on.
Yeah, what a shitty hill.
I was reading this. Apparently the movie... So in 1975, Wojtwiczyk... The person, John Wojtwiczyk, I don't know how you say his name, the guy who Sonny is based off of, wrote a letter to the New York Times out of concern that people would believe the movie version of the events, which he said was only 30% accurate. His main objection was the inaccurate portrayal of his wife, Carmen Bufuco, as a plain, overweight woman whose behavior led to his relationship with Eden, when in fact he had left her 2 years prior before he met Eden, who is Leon's. Other concerns that he had were fictionalized in the movie were that he never spoke to his mother and that the police refused to let him speak to his wife, Carmen. In addition, the movie insinuated that he had sold out Sal to the police, and although Wojtwiczyk claimed this was untrue, several attempts were made on his life following an inmate screening of the movie.
Oh. It is weird because it does give that impression, because he doesn't tell Sal that he did that, like that the FBI basically said they were going to kill him and that you should just stay calm. But I mean, there's not really much evidence in the movie that plays out, you know, like they do kill Sal and he does live, but it feels more like happenstance that happens, you know, like it's not like he like intentionally sold him out. Like, you know, near the end, when Sal dies, he just gets taken out because he's the one with the gun to the back of his head, you know?
Yeah, I was wondering, because it had that vibe at the end, though. It had the vibe that he, like, had gave up Sal.
Really?
To me, like, he looked like, I don't know, he looked like he had regret. That might just be, like,
maybe regret that Sal died?
Yeah, for the whole situation. Yeah. But
that's how I interpreted it.
I was thinking it. Maybe it's just kind of open-ended. That it was like, he might have given them up, he might not have.
The National Gay Task Force approved the script of the movie, which probably helps.
What is that?
The National Gay Task Force is now the National LGBTQ Task Force. So it was...
Is it in support updated. Or is it...
Yes, it's an advocacy. Okay. It's a social justice advocacy nonprofit.
Okay. Task Force makes me feel like it's like, you know, like...
Yes, understandable. I completely get why you would think that. Anytime you hear the word something something task force, it sounds like it's...
It does sound usually against...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we're setting up this task force to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, even the, like, the writer of the screenplay and that contacted a journalist who covered the scene for a gay publication, had, like, technical assistance through that. So it seems like the writers in that were pretty, like, forward from jump about getting the movie right and making sure it wasn't, like, some sort of... know, like a attack or like attack but like an affront to people in the LGBTQ.
I appreciate how this movie starts and just goes right into the robbery. There's no setup, there's no like planning. Like, it was just like, all right, it's on. And then just keeps you on the edge of your seat for the next 2 hours.
Yeah,
like I feel like never in that movie was I like, oh man, I feel like I could breathe easy right now because they're it's okay.
Yeah, it kind of always was like, what is going to happen next? Like, what are they doing? Like, and when you're like in a moment of peace, like there was a there's a couple moments where he's just kind of like shooting the shit with his hostages, and then like the power goes out, you know, or like something like that, or like
he's shooting the shit with the guy and he sees the guy's climbing up the window.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's parts, there are lulls, but they're quickly, like, but I feel like they kind of condition you early on to, like, be, like, what's going on next? Where are we going?
I also like the fact that they did that in terms of everything taking place throughout the course of, like, the day. And just letting, like, oh, the phone calls to the families or this or that kind of tell you the backstory of how we got here. Versus like, oh, let's do a cutaway to a flashback, or let's start the movie, you know, with wherever, and then we'll kind of jump to them on the bank robbery. I always prefer it when it's like, hey, we're going to let like the dialogue between characters explain what's going on and how we got here, instead of just being like, oh, let's show you the viewer how we got here. It's like, no. Nope, we're here. We're in the middle of a robbery. Just let this play out.
Yeah.
I feel like it's hard. I feel like I talk about this a lot. I feel like when a movie is really good, it's kind of hard to like sit there and like rave about it and like dissect it. I feel like when a movie's bad,
yeah,
it's very easy to be like, this part sucked or this part sucked and like rag on it. But then like once you get to like a really good movie, it's like, I just love it.
No notes. Yeah.
It. Like everything about it.
No notes.
Like, I will say, I feel like this is... This movie is probably not, like, super rewatchable.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's one of those, like, it's not, it's, okay, it's, so let's spectrum this, at least for me. Like, I think of, like, a rewatchable movie.
Animal House.
Like, Top Gun. Top Gun, it's short, it's relatively fun, like, it's a fun movie, like, you know, you don't really have to have, like, a huge attention to detail to enjoy it. And then on the other side of that spectrum is, I don't know, A Clockwork Orange, where I've seen it
Ben's
once.
Like Top Gun, and I short never... movie, 2 hours, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like 2001 A Space Odyssey is on the other end of like things I'm not itching to watch immediately.
No, mine is a Clockwork Orange, where I never want to watch that movie ever again.
Well, but that's for different reasons. That's because it's not, I don't know, not enjoyable.
It's a good movie. I just never need to watch it again.
Yeah.
This movie falls probably, like, to the Clockwork side of center for me.
I think it's also hard because, like, I feel like some movies like, I will never have the same experience I had watching this movie for the first
time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
true. If that
true.
Makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Like, I was constantly like, oh, shit, what's going to happen next? Like, every time he went out to talk to the detective, I was like, are they just going to fucking snipe him right in the street? Like, I don't know. I felt on edge, and I felt like I was waiting for the next twist or the next turn. And I feel like that kind of affects rewatchability a little bit for me. Like, definitely, I do agree. Like, I don't think I'm going to be rushing to watch this one again.
Yeah.
But I will see myself watching this at some point in my life again.
I think I'll be able to watch, like, I'll probably look to watch it again. I just think it's one of those, like, it needs more time than just, like, yeah, I could watch this, like, twice within the same year and be like, yeah, okay. And I feel like it's like, no, I probably need to give it, like, a year or so before I'm like, yeah, this was a good movie. Let's rewatch this.
I think it's one of those ones, too, where you, like, you may not watch it for a year, you may not watch it for a couple years, but then you'll be like, oh, Dog Day Afternoon's back on Netflix or something, or HBO?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, let's watch that, dude. Like, that movie was great.
Let's watch that before it leaves again.
None of us had seen this, so we got a full Goob Squad this week. You're going to get 3 fresh ratings. Cam, kick us off. What did you think of Dog Day Afternoon?
Yeah, so I thought it was really good. I enjoyed it a lot. As we talked about before, it is, I think, Pacino's best acting role. It's also has John Cazale. I don't know how you pronounce that. It's like one of his like 6 movies, and he, even though he's not in it for, he doesn't have a lot of dialogue lines, he's also good in it. And the supporting cast, actually, I feel like pretty good. Like all the like hostages in the bank or and anything, like all those people are solid. The plot was enjoyable. I didn't really know where it was going next until it ended. And, you know, those are things that, I don't know, it sounds stupid, but that's, like, you know, what makes these types of movies good is hold your attention and you can get through, and you get through it and it's hard to guess, like, where it's going to go. So I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. It was very good.
Yeah, this was a movie we talked about doing. We kind of switched things up last week, but we were kind of looking at movies that were on or were leaving soon, and this was one that came up that was like, oh, we should check this out. Like, I've seen references to it. Like, it looks like something I definitely want to do. I wasn't sure what my expectations were, but this blew it out of the water. Like, I was expecting it to be, like, kind of in this 70s movie vein of, like, kind of Dirty Harry, like, in that realm of, like, it's more, I guess, like, suspense thriller, less drama. You know what I mean? Like, more bank robbery, less about, like, the actual robbers and, you know, Sonny's life and his interactions with the hostages and everything like that. I thought it was going to be more focused on, like, the detectives or whatever that are, like, there to deal with it. But, wow. Yeah, this movie is really good. If you haven't seen it, watch it. If you have seen it and it's been a minute, watch it again. It's really good. It's an 8 out of 10 for me. Yeah, like we talked about with Al Pacino, this is one of those movies where I watched and I'm like, okay, I get the hype.
So I'm reading here that Al Pacino almost didn't do the movie.
Interesting. Who was it going to be?
So that's what actually makes it interesting.
Oh, I have a guess because I read something that was like what the Times, the person who, or the Life article, literally when they were doing the article, they said that that Sonny looked like Al Pacino or Dustin Hoffman.
It actually is Dustin Hoffman. So, yeah, so apparently Al Pacino had just got done with The Godfather Part 2, and he was really into method acting for some reason. And he was basically like, I'm really exhausted. I don't want to play this, like, you know, exhausted dude, like, wired dude. I don't want to do it. And so the director was like, okay, I don't love that, but fine. And then they gave it to Dustin Hoffman. And because they gave it to Dustin Hoffman, Pacino was like, nah, fuck that. I'm going to do it. Because it was specifically because it was Dustin Hoffman. He was like, yeah, no, fuck that. I'm doing it.
So Hoffman and Pacino were the 70s version of what Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger were in the 80s. Literally, I think it's like there's, I can't remember what fucking movie it is. There's a movie that Stallone talks about doing, and he's like, the only reason I did that movie is because they told me they offered it to Schwarzenegger, And so it's like, fuck it, then I'm gonna do it then. If you're giving it to him, then yeah, I'll do it. And then like years later, Schwarzenegger was like, I was never gonna do that fucking movie. Like, I just said I would do it so you would do it, and then they wouldn't ask me.
That is funny.
I know Ben, and we had previously kind of talked about, like, Ben mentioned, oh, like, I thought it was going to lean super, like, 70s one way. You know, I'm going to add this to this list of, like, movies, at least, that we've done on the podcast from the 70s, that, like, All the President's Men, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, like, those movies from the 70s, I think this is added to that list. It's a fantastic movie. While I may not rush to watch it again, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It exceeded my expectations. The cinematography is really well done. And like I said earlier, it takes a bank robbery and something that's relatively boring in a theory. It's people inside a bank for probably 1.5 hours. And then the next 30 minutes, it's either Sonny outside of the bank talking to the police or their trip to the airport. And it makes you on edge and like just wondering what's going to happen next. I feel like I didn't unclench my butt cheeks for 2 hours. I think it being based on a true story really makes it a little bit better, even if they, you know, fabricated parts of it. I think having these, like, polarizing characters just makes it that much more interesting, where you can't decide if you want to root for the bad guy or you want to go against them and hope something bad happens. I mean, hell, even Sal at the end of the movie, I was like, damn, man, they just fucking killed Sal like that? Like, I'm gonna give this movie a 10 out of 10. I fucking love this thing. It was fantastic. I would highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. You can check out Dog Day Afternoon on HBO Max as of recording. It does leave at the end of August, so I'd hurry up and check that one out. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate, subscribe. Check us out on Instagram at Cocktails and Classics Pod and hit up those Drizzly and Casker links below. Make yourself a bank robber and get fucked up. Check us out next time and share us with your friends and family. As always, watch responsibly.